Welcome to the deep dive. We are diving into a pretty big moment in ancient history today. The establishment of kingship in Israel. You shared some really great sources on this one.
Yeah.
They all focus on a key tension that makes this whole period so fascinating.
Right. You know, it's really interesting because the people want a human king.
Right.
But that's kind of a rejection of God's kingship over them. Right. But God in his sovereignty still allows it. So what we are going to be doing in this deep dive is looking at how this human kingship came to be, focusing on Samuel's role in it and how it was supposed to work within the existing covenant.
Okay, great. So this initial request for a king and God's agreement, which if you look at your sources, you'll see it wasn't exactly enthusiastic about it. It wasn't this resounding, yes, this is the way to go.
No, not at all.
So right from the start, this wasn't just some political shift.
Yeah.
It was a theological turning point.
Mm-hmm.
The people seemingly chose a visible earthly ruler over an invisible divine one. That tension right there at the start is really key for understanding everything that's to follow.
Definitely. And the sources you sent emphasize this whole thing stemmed from wanting to be like the other nations around them.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted a human leader.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a military one, right?
Yeah.
And overlooking that fact that Yahweh had been their deliverer and king.
Right.
So, I mean, that's crucial to keep in mind as we jump into the events.
Yeah. Okay, so we have the scene set, right? There's this underlying tension. Let's dive into the first key event, the public designation of Saul. The ceremony at Mizpah, described in 1 Samuel chapter 10, verses 17 to 27.
Yeah.
What really stands out to you about this event?
Well, you know, when I was reading this, what really stood out to me was this blend of divine selection and public affirmation. So you've got the casting of lots, which singles out Saul. And that indicates God's choice, right? But then Samuel presents him to all the people.
Yeah.
And the description of Saul's impressive physical presence, he's taller than everyone else, and the people immediately cry out, "Long live the king!"
Wow.
That really paints this vivid picture. You can imagine the scene. This was what they had in mind. This is what they wanted.
This is the kind of king that they were looking for?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a moment with tons of energy, excitement.
Right.
But the material you shared also points out that Samuel had some reservations amidst all this excitement.
Yeah.
He was worried about how the people would understand this whole new role of king, especially when they looked at the rulers of the nations around them.
Exactly. Samuel wanted to make sure that they didn't just equate Israelite kingship with, you know, the monarchs in other kingdoms who had unchecked power. You know, that's kind of a big deal. This leads us to the next point, the regulations of kingship.
Yes, the regulations of the kingship, or the manner of the kingdom, from 1 Samuel 10.25.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel lays down some ground rules here.
He does.
Sadly, the written scroll he deposited in the sanctuary hasn't survived.
Right.
But from your sources, it seems like these regulations likely built upon Moses' law of the king in Deuteronomy 17, right?
Yeah, and the main idea seems to have been this establishment of what your source calls a constitutional monarch.
Okay, interesting.
Which essentially means it wasn't about an absolute monarch. It was about a king under the law.
So not just any king, but one who's under the law.
Right, so ultimate authority remained with God. It's pretty revolutionary for that time.
Right, because all the kings around them had absolute authority.
Yeah.
So a king, yes, but one who operates within God's framework. The Lord remains sovereign. The king was intended to be God's representative.
Right.
A vehicle for his rule. This is a very different model than the absolute power of the other rulers.
Totally different. And we even see an early sign of this different kind of leadership. Because after this public designation at Mizpah, Saul just goes back home to Gibeah and keeps working in the fields.
Huh, interesting.
It's not this immediate, I'm king pomp and circumstance. He just kept doing his life, his work, until there was a crisis that called for him.
That detail about him still working in the fields.
Yeah.
It really emphasizes this wasn't just about personal glory.
No.
Now, the establishment of the monarchy wasn't just a one-time event, was it? There was a process to this.
Yeah.
Your material outlined three stages.
Yeah. You've got designation, which includes both the private anointing by Samuel and this public selection by Lot at Mizpah.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's confirmation. And lastly, inauguration.
So those last two are what we see play out in 1 Samuel 11.
That's right.
Okay, so let's talk about that confirmation stage.
Yeah.
Which is tied to Saul's victory over Ammonites.
Okay.
And this is where things get pretty intense with that whole attack on Jabesh Gilead. So what's important for us to understand about that?
So this attack, it was a huge threat. And the elders of Jabesh Gilead, they were desperate, right?
Yeah.
So they asked Saul for help. What's amazing is what happened next. The Spirit of God comes upon Saul. He gets filled with righteous anger about this aggression.
Okay.
And he super quickly gathers all the fighting men from both Israel and Judah.
And the way he summons those troops is pretty intense, right?
Yeah.
Sending dismembered pieces of oxen is this stark warning.
It definitely got their attention.
Yeah. 330,000 men responded. I mean, that's a huge number.
It is. And if you look closely at the sources, you'll see that this wasn't just because Saul was angry. It was also God who put fear in the people who got the summons. So they understood how serious it was, that they couldn't just ignore the call.
Yeah. Then Saul's message to Jabesh-Gilead was, don't worry, you'll be delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then we have this tricky response from the leaders in Jabesh to the Ammonite king, Nahash.
Right.
I mean, they were playing a dangerous game there, it seems. And then overnight, Saul launches this surprise attack, leading to a decisive victory.
It really was decisive, and your sources are clear. It was the Lord who gave Israel that victory.
And what happens after that victory?
Oh, yeah. This is super interesting. Some people wanted to execute those who had doubted Saul's ability to be king.
Okay.
But Saul wouldn't do it. He attributed that victory to the Lord.
Wow.
You know, he said no one would be put to death that day because Yahweh had rescued Israel. That right there shows he really understands covenantal kingship.
Because?
Because it means that Israel's security was dependent on God's grace, not just on Saul's power as a human king.
Yeah.
You see, that moment, it seems like mercy, right? But it actually shows he gets it. He knows what it really means to be king in Israel.
Yeah. So it's this subtle detail that actually tells us a lot.
It really does.
So that brings us to the inauguration and the covenant renewal at Gilgal, which is the third stage.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel calls for this assembly to renew the kingdom, right?
Yeah.
And your sources point out there is some interesting debate about what that even means.
Yeah, that is a really important nuance here.
What exactly is being renewed?
Right. Some scholars think it just refers to Saul's own personal reign.
Okay.
But your sources made a really compelling case for understanding it as more of a renewal of allegiance to Yahweh's kingship.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Saul hasn't officially begun his reign yet, right? So what exactly are they renewing if it's his personal rule?
Right. It would be weird to renew something that hasn't even really started yet.
Exactly. If you look at the context of everything happening in chapters 8 through 12,
yeah,
it seems to be about the people recommitting to God's kingship, the kingship they kind of tried to ditch when they wanted a human ruler like the nations around them.
So the important part isn't just that Saul became king.
Right.
It's how he became king.
Exactly. They asked for a human king, kind of turning away from Yahweh. So this gathering at Gilgal, while it does make Saul king, it's really about fixing the broken covenant relationship between the people and the Lord.
Okay, so they're picking a king, but within this context of, okay, but we still need to remember that Yahweh is our God.
Exactly. Your sources point out that even translations like the NIV and the TNIV struggle with the right words to use here. Renew or reaffirm, made king or confirm as king. You know, little changes in the words have big implications.
Right. It emphasizes the importance of understanding the words and the theological implications that go along with those specific words.
Yeah, yeah.
So this inauguration, it wasn't just some political thing.
No, yeah.
It was all tied up with reaffirming their covenant with Yahweh.
Exactly.
They weren't trying to replace God. They were trying to integrate this human leadership within God's sovereignty.
Right.
Now, this isn't unique to Israel, is it?
No.
Your sources pointed out some parallels with other times when leaders changed, like when Moses passed on leadership to Joshua in Deuteronomy, and when Joshua renewed the covenant at Shechem in Joshua 24. So it seems like in all those instances, leadership changes went hand in hand with recommitting to the covenant with God.
Exactly.
So the Gilgal Assembly, it marks a huge turning point. We move from the time of the judges to the time of kings. But importantly, it all happened within this framework of their covenant with God.
Right.
Now, if you look at chapter 12 of 1 Samuel, it gives a much more detailed look at this covenant renewal ceremony.
Yeah.
So what stands out to you there?
Well, chapter 12 is super interesting. Samuel gives this long speech to the people, and there's a lot we can learn from it. First, he wants the people to publicly acknowledge his good leadership. He's basically reminding them that he's been faithful and honest.
Okay.
This wasn't just some goodbye speech, though. He was setting the stage for his role as a prophet, which he would continue in this new system. It's kind of like he's saying, hey, before we do this new thing, let's remember how faithful I've been.
Yeah. Let's remember what we've seen up until now.
Exactly. But then he shifts to their request for a king.
Yeah.
And if you look at your sources, they point out that Samuel sees this as breaking the covenant.
Right.
He goes on to remind them of all the times Yahweh has saved them, how faithful God has been throughout their history. He even includes himself among those who helped them.
Yeah.
But then comes the climax of this whole speech. He straight up says that wanting a king to deal with the Ammonites was a total rejection of Yahweh's kingship.
Yeah.
That line in 1 Samuel 12.12, "Even though the Lord your God was your king," really sums up their mistake.
It really highlights the issue.
Yeah. But even though they messed up, God, being gracious as he is, still gave them a king.
So we come to verses 14 and 15, where Samuel outlines what Israel must do now.
Right.
They have a king, but what's their responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
Samuel says, if you fear the Lord and serve him. And then comes the part, the consequence after that, if.
Yeah.
Scholars call it the apodosis.
Right.
Which I know from your reading has been the subject of some discussion.
It has.
Just to be clear, this is the then part, what follows if they do what he's saying.
Yeah. And that phrase, follow after Yahweh or be after Yahweh, means something specific.
Okay.
It's about choosing to follow one king over another, which you can see in other passages from 2 Samuel and 1 Kings.
Okay.
So Samuel is saying, look, even with a human king, you still belong to Yahweh. Your safety depends on your relationship with him.
So it doesn't matter that they have a human king. They haven't replaced God. God is still their king, and they need to act like it.
Exactly. And then to show everyone just how powerful God is and how serious this turning away from him is, there's thunder and rain.
And that was right during the wheat harvest.
Yeah.
That would have been really unusual, wouldn't it?
Totally unheard of.
Wow.
It was a sign straight from God, which Samuel had asked for. It scared the people so much that they confessed their sin.
Wow. So they knew they had messed up.
They did. The sources you shared compare this to what happened at Sinai and Mizpah, where God also showed up in powerful ways.
Right.
This was a reminder that Yahweh was their real deliverer.
Then Samuel says, don't be afraid, but serve the Lord with all your heart. Right.
Yes, that sums up what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
He also tells them not to follow useless idols, which I think still applies today. Don't let anything replace worshiping the Lord.
It's about keeping our focus on God.
Exactly. And Samuel reassures them that God won't leave them.
That's comforting.
Yeah. But he also says that he'll still be there to talk to God for them and to teach them the right way to live the way of the covenant.
That's so important, isn't it?
Yeah. It establishes this idea that the kings are accountable to what the prophets say.
Right. It's not just whatever the king wants to do.
No.
So Samuel tells them to fear and serve the Lord and to remember all the great things he's done.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of what Joshua said in Joshua 24.
Right. It's all connected.
It all goes back to those basic covenant principles, even with a human king. And then at the very end of the chapter, he warns them about what will happen if they turn away from the Lord.
Right. Your sources emphasize how important this whole chapter is. It shows that Israel's kingship was different because it was part of their covenant with God.
Right.
It wasn't like other kingdoms around them. It was meant to be a way for God to rule.
Yeah.
And that's really important for understanding the whole story of God's plan for humanity.
Yeah, because then this covenantal kingship gets all tied up with this idea of the Messiah.
Exactly.
The promise to David in 2 Samuel 7 of an everlasting dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's huge. It all comes from this.
It does. You know, when the human kings messed up, that's what led to the prophets talking about a king who would come from God. A king who would bring true peace and justice. And then in the New Testament, we see that Jesus is that king. He's the son of David, the Messiah. People recognize that when he's born, throughout his ministry, even before he's crucified, that's all connected back to this idea of kingship that we've been talking about.
And the early church knew that Jesus was the Messiah.
Yeah.
And the Bible even talks about him coming back again as the ultimate king from David's line. It's in Revelation 22.16.
That's right. And it's also important to remember that Saul, Israel's first human king, he messed up in the end because he didn't follow the covenant.
Yeah.
And that's why David became king. He's described as a man after God's own heart. And then there's this whole story about his family line lasting forever.
Right.
So it all ties together.
Okay, so just to sum all that up for everyone.
Yeah.
The point of having a king in Israel wasn't to get rid of God.
No.
It was about having a king who worked within the covenant. A king who had to follow God's law and listen to the prophets. Totally different than all the other kings around them with all that power.
Totally.
God was still in charge. The king was just his representative. And he had to rule the way God wanted.
Exactly.
This has been an amazing deep dive.
Yeah.
Really makes you think, huh? It makes me think about how this whole thing with human leaders and God's authority, you know, how that still plays out in the world today.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about having leaders who are accountable to someone or something bigger than themselves? Like they have to follow certain rules, you know? Uh-huh. Does that still work today? I'm going to think about.
Definitely.
Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.